This podcast is about your future. What if the next years of your life can be the best years of your life? When full-time work becomes optional, you'll have the time to do all the things you've always wanted to do, if only you had the time. And soon you will. But to make the most of it, you'll need to be well prepared, and that goes well beyond your financial planning. Each week, your host, Joe Casey, is inviting you into conversations with his guests to bring you insights, inspiration, and practical ideas to design your new life, a life you'll build around what matters most to you and on your own terms. Let's get started.
The days of the three-generation household are, for the most part, long gone. In the years ahead, solo aging is expected to be a major source of stress for close to 25 million of the 65-plus population. The number of adults who live alone and far away from family is growing. Even those of us who have children cannot necessarily count on their help. The number of older adults who live within 10 miles of a relative has fallen significantly. When my guest today, Carol Marrick, was helping to care for her aging parents, she got a wake-up call. Who, she wondered, would help to care for her when she grew older? The struggles Carol's parents faced were warning signs of what she could expect. Divorced and childless, Carol lived alone in the suburb and had little savings. Caring for her parents required a massive effort, involving three siblings and numerous professionals. That care could someday be needed for her, only she would not have family nearby to step up to the challenge. Carol is the author of the book Solo and Smart, and she teaches people how to assess, discover, and plan to gain control over how they want to live in the years ahead, and not only how to age well, but how to live well by shaping the future they want rather than reacting to it. Carol, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome, Joe. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
So I was wondering if you could please share the story of becoming a caregiver for your parents and how that shaped your planning for later life.
Well, it certainly is an interesting one, Joe, and I'm glad you asked. At the time, I worked full-time. I worked in the tech business. I was in sales. And both my parents were starting to become ill. And even before that, I have to say, I was living in California at the time when my mother had open heart surgery. And it really became really an awareness that my parents were getting older. And at one point, they will need help. And I felt very committed to my parents. So a couple of years after that, I moved back to Texas. Even when I did move to Texas, I still, of course, was in the high-tech industry. I was working full-time and doing the best I could, helping both my parents. Dad lived with Alzheimer's. My mother lived, of course, with several chronic illnesses. And so their time or their need or needs, I should say, were very demanding. And unfortunately, my parents, or maybe fortunately for them, but not necessarily for their offspring, they really expected us to help them out because they did that for their parents. You know, my parents, my family, were farmers, and we lived in a rural community. So we just helped each other out as a family, and we were a very large family. So it was pretty easy to do. However, once we started moving off, going to college, you know, that kind of put a real dent in how we could share in those responsibilities. But, you know, we tried to hire for help, but they just wouldn't have it. So my sisters and I really ended up pitching in as best we could. And quite frankly, we did a pretty good job taking care of them. And my parents were very lucky to have three loving daughters. But unfortunately, many of us don't have that, especially have three loving daughters that were willing to really pitch in. So eventually, once they both passed, I was out on a walk one day because I love walking. And I was thinking about my parents. I was missing them. I was crying. And then I started reflecting back on that experience of elder care and the demands of growing older. and what that means, what that looks like, and started to think about, well, who pitched in and what we had to do. And then all of a sudden, I just stopped and I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I'm single. I have no children. Here I am. I'm close to 55 years old. What will I do? And it just, Joe, I tell you, I was walking and it just stopped me in my tracks. I thought, holy moly, what am I going to do? You know, because it's filled with so many complexities growing older. So that's when, that was my wake-up call. And it was more than a wake-up call. It was really more like a slap in the face. It's like, get your act together. So that's where it all started for me.
I appreciate you sharing the story. And when you think back at that point in time, what were the top concerns that were on your mind when you first focused on where to go from there in your own planning?
You know, the first thing that came to mind was my health, because I knew if I'm going to be living alone, taking care of myself, keeping myself in a position where I'm strong, in good health, I can drive, I can walk, I can basically do all the activities of daily living all alone, I better have a healthy and strong body. So that's where I started. However, I was in pretty decent health anyway, and it was where I was failing in the money department. However, I just thought I better get my health together first. And once I did, at the same time, I have to admit that I was working on the money issues. So that was 15 years ago. And I'm pretty proud to say that with that wake-up call, I have put myself in a very good position. I am not fearful. I am in excellent health now. My money is decent. I mean, it's good. All my bills are paid. I have no expenses. So I've done a really good job in handling and managing my finances and the other top concerns. So those were my two, I would have to say, top two concerns that really scared me, especially the money part.
Well, well done, planning. As you point out in your book, pays off.
Oh, it does. Absolutely.
So you note in your book that one in three people, 55 and older, are single, and one in six are childless. What are some of the challenges that solo agers face? And what's the flip side? What are some of the advantages?
Well, you know, that was such a good question, and I appreciate you asking me that. And I posed that to my group on Facebook. I have a group called Elder Orphans on Facebook, and I pose that question to them because, I mean, I know how I handle my challenges, and I certainly know what they are after writing, especially after that big wake-up call with my parents. But I wanted to know what other people are thinking, and some really insightful things came up in the group. And one of them is, and I thought, well, you know what? This is right. The first one was wear and tear on the body. If you're living alone, you are completely and totally dependent on yourself to fix everything and to do everything, to cook, to clean, to fix things if something breaks down, or, you know, if you don't want to hire a contractor, or if you can't afford a handyman, you have to fix some of those things yourself, which I have learned to do over time. And really does put your body in a precarious position, especially the older you get. And so the other challenge is, of course, as a single person, and this has always been the most aggravating issue for me, and that is all my bills, all the cost of living, like utilities, mortgage, your car, food, insurance, every single one of them fall on my shoulders. I think that is one of the biggest challenges that people living alone, no matter what age you are, have to deal with. and you're relying on one paycheck. And I'm sorry, I'm going to turn this into an aggravation here. I'm going to have a a complaint session. And that's one of the things, you know, because I have quite a few single cousins. My sister is single. I have a lot of single friends. And our biggest issue with the IRS is that we believe, of course, I'm sure married couples don't believe this, but we believe we should have our, you know, the, the tax benefits of being single should be higher. Or what do you call that when you, at the end of your, you're doing your taxes, right? And then you get a single or couple.
Yes, tax deductions for.
Oh, thank you, deductions. We think we that should be higher for us as well. Or it may be equal too, because we're still depending on one salary to pay all our bills. So that's one of the challenges. Other ones as you're aging alone is emergency rides, you know, finding someone to take you to the hospital, for example. And I have to say that there was this one woman in my elder orphan group. She actually drove herself at midnight to the hospital alone because she was having an emergency situation. And I thought, good grief. We have got to prepare for these things. We cannot assume that we will be able to rely solely on ourselves to face these emergencies. So, if, for example, I have a story. When I first moved where I live now, I live in an urban setting in a high rise because that was consciously made and it was part of my plan because I wanted neighbors and I wanted friends right outside my door. I knew that would be one of the safest and most secure places for me to live. So one day I was cooking and I cut my finger, and I mean, I cut it badly. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, I'm new here. I don't know anyone. But what I did, I ran down the hall, had my finger all wrapped up, knocked on a neighbor's door, and I said, I need your help. Please help me. And so fortunately, she was very generous with her time, and she helped me out. And we went to the closest urgent care centers. So yeah, I mean, that's another challenge we have. What about if you have a surgery? I can't tell you how many single or solo patients are in the hospital, and they have no family members looking out for them. And who can be their advocate, talking with their doctor and with the nurses there. So who's going to step up for you if you end up in surgery and in the hospital? Who's going to look out for you? That's another situation. It's a huge challenge for us. Dealing with all the losses, like losing a pet or a friend or a family member. Who do you have nearby that will support you? Is another big challenge that we face. So, and then the advantages, and I have to say, I have to think real hard. And sometimes you hate to admit being so selfish, but I think if you spend a lot of time alone, you really get spoiled because you have so much freedom. You don't have to worry about having a conversation with someone or compromising about something. You're totally on your own. You have all the freedom that you want. And you can cook when you want, go to bed when you want, watch TV when you want. So that's, I would say, that's a total advantage. And so is traveling, you know, traveling alone and deciding where you want to take a vacation. So everything really basically, and I think what happens, Joe, over time is when you're living alone for so long, you become so resourceful. I think you become smarter because you only have yourself to rely on for making decisions, thinking about your health, making medical decisions. However, you really shouldn't. I mean, there comes a point in your life when you get older that you really need more people around you. And fortunately for me, I saw that with my parents. So it taught me early on, it's good to be self-reliant, and we indeed need to learn those skills. However, I think one of the skills of being self-reliant is to have a strong support team nearby who can step up and help.
Makes a lot of sense. And Carol, what are some of the risks that solo agers may not be planning for, but should be?
Well, just re-listen to those challenges I just mentioned, right? Start right there to prepare. For example, if money is tight, you know, if you live on a restricted budget and you own a home, how about renting out a room? You know, how will you make extra income? Because as we know today, bills will only go up. The cost of food will only go up. How are you going to increase your salary and pay for the increased cost over time? How are you going to keep up with this steady increase of bills on a restricted budget? So think of ways that you can partner with other people. I know my book offers a lot of resources and strategies on planning for these risks. But the first question everyone should know is, what are my biggest risks? For example, with me, mine was money and health. And that would be one of the very first questions. I don't care if you are married or if you're single or even if you have a child living with you next door. What are your risks of aging as you grow older? That's one of the first things that we all need to figure out. It could be, I would suppose most of us are dealing with health issues, right? So start thinking about the different ways that you can have better health. And the first place that I started was having deep conversations and a lot of tests, medical tests, but it was all headed up with my medical team because I wanted to take the very best approach to getting healthy. And all of that would include your diet, exercise, self-care, mental care. Are you thinking positively about growing older, or do you feel depressed about it? And if you feel depressed about it, I suggest you start dealing with that now, you know, before you get really old, right?
Great advice. So you mentioned that one of the things you were thinking about is where to live, and you chose to live in a high-rise in an urban setting. Based on your experience, when people consider moving in later life, what are some smart ways to evaluate a location?
I can share my story, and I also have a long chapter in the book about that. But, you know, the first question that I even asked myself before making a move was, what are the issues that I'm facing right now? I mean, why am I even thinking about making a move? And on a separate, on a notepad or however you want to document and maybe do some research about this, but start digging into those issues. And for example, I'm going to share with you my issues. When I was living in the suburbs, I lived in a two-story home alone in the suburbs. And I thought, Carol, and then I was approaching 62 now or 63. And I thought, Carol, is this a good idea to be going up and down the stairs, especially since your utility room is on the second floor? I mean, granted, I was 62 or so. I was still in great shape. However, what would that look like for me when I'm 72? So start thinking about what is prompting your reasons for living. I mean, for moving, right? For moving could be maybe your house is too big. Well, that's a pretty obvious one. Mine was too. So that was one of the things that really pushed me into thinking about how do I want to live or what would my house look like that would really support me in a secure way that I could have, that would really increase my social connections, my feeling of security, knowing that I have someone nearby if I had an emergency. So to evaluate a location, all I'm saying is take your time. Don't rush into anything. But you also have to look at the unintended consequences if you do make a move. For example, one would be, darn, I didn't know it was so costly. You know, especially today, since housing is so expensive, and no matter where you move to, you're going to find expensive real estate. So just list out what would the unintended consequences be. For me, moving to an urban area, first of all, it was quite expensive to make that move, you know, the moving cost. I'm starting all over again, having to make new friends. That's an unintended consequence. I knew that if I lived in a high-rise building, I would have a better chance to make friends. However, why couldn't I have made more friends right where I was if I had just put more time, energy, and made a commitment to making friends with my neighbors? Because I could have done that instead of having to make the move. So I would say unintended consequences is one of the first places to start when you're making a move. But if you're looking at a location, for me, that was the biggest reason, is because I wanted people around me, a lot of people around me. I wanted to be able to walk my errands. I did not want to have to rely on a car. I knew that my parents needed rides consistently. They were no longer able to drive, and they lived in a rural city or town, I should say, and they couldn't drive to the grocery store. So they relied on their daughters to do that for them. So what are some of the things that driving, for example, going to the doctor, will that location provide you or give you easy access to all of that? Or can you make it work right where you are? And in my book, again, I walk people through how to think about it, because it's such, even in my group, there are people who are constantly talking about making a move, and we talk about it. Are you sure you want to do that? Can you make it work for you rather than having to endure all the expenses? And it takes a lot of energy to pack and move, unpack, make new friends, learn the area. But I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely. It changes a lot. And you mentioned the social impact and making new friends. And I've learned today the cut finger strategy, if you move, is a good way to make new friends. And I'm sure you're not recommending that. But when people do retire, leave the world of full-time work, and or they move, as you're pointing out, their social context really changing. What's your advice about how people can make new friends and build social connections as an older adult?
Get out of the house, right? I live, like I say, in a walkable area. I am constantly meeting people outdoors, you know, outside, which is great. Of course, Texas has a conducive weather so that you can spend most or a lot of time outside, except in August. But I mean, really, we have senior centers, we have online communities, we have lifelong learning institutes that you meet people. Now, you may not meet if you're online and with groups and having, let's say you're learning a new skill and it's online, it's a new course or what have you. Sure, you're going to meet new people. And it will be online, but what's wrong with that? I mean, it's a start. It's a start to have a face to talk to, right? If you don't mind driving and getting out and being really social, then go to a senior center or the public library or volunteer or get a part-time job. Or, you know, really figure out what is your life purpose? What do you enjoy and love doing? I personally love to write. That's one of my, I just love it. And I have joined writing groups. Either we'll meet online. Well, we have been for the last 2 years, but before that we met in person. It was kind of like a book club, except we wrote and shared our writings with one another. and it was fun. So, you know, think about some of the things that you enjoy doing and start looking for groups online, in-person groups, online groups, meetups, what have you, where you will share that interest and you will find like-minded peers and make a lot of friends. And also, I suggest getting out of your house and meeting your neighbors and have potlucks with them and barbecues and things like that. We did some of that before. Well, we do that a lot here where I live. However, I did that a lot with when I lived in the suburbs. But start to get to know your neighbors. And of course, take it very slowly because you never know. I mean, you need to make sure that you trust these are trustworthy people. However, just get out of the house and start meeting people. If you have a pet, I mean, take your dog outside. That's one of the best ways to meet people, right?
Absolutely. And you mentioned focusing first on what it is that you enjoy. And I noticed in your book that you've identified 10 life domains to plan for. And of course, they include the critical areas, serious areas like health, finances, legal issues. But I also noticed that your list also includes something else important, fun. How should people include fun in their planning?
Oh my gosh, shouldn't we? How else are you going to enjoy life? And for me, and everyone's going to be different. You may find having fun just spending time alone. I mean, a lot of people do that. But it's, when I was thinking about your question this morning, you know, as a matter of fact, I thought, if you don't have a plan for your future, you could create a club, your own personal club, what I would call a group activity. Let's say you have 3 friends that you really trust, or maybe you have a neighbor you trust. And why not get together and create an activity like a book, like a book club, but however, make it a planning club. And so the 3 or 4 or 5 of you could get together, you know, meet once or twice a month and take one topic at a time, each of one of those domains, and start talking about it. How, you know, think of creative ways that you can really think about how you want to live your life 1 year from now, 3 years from now, even 5 and 10 years from now. And share those ideas. And members can go off each after the meeting and do their own research. Now, to me, I think that's fun. Don't you, Joe?
Absolutely. It absolutely can be. I appreciate that. There's lots of ways. But it's noteworthy that you have that as a core thing, you know, separate focus to make sure that that's in the mix.
Absolutely. One thing I wanted to mention to you or on this podcast is because I did listen to your interview with Bill Thompson. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, now that guy seems to know how to have fun. He really does. And you know what that secret is? I think he has. He thinks outside the box. Mm-hmm. And when he talked about going into a restaurant, because he wanted to have conversations with people, he would sit at the bar and have his meal. Because he said, that's where people are. They're not going to be sitting. You know, you can't have a conversation if you're sitting at a table alone. You know, go to the bar. And I thought, what a clever guy. That's so true. And that's something that we all can do. If you're out to lunch or you want to go to lunch and you're alone, go sit at the bar. I think that's a great strategy. And I also believe in finding different, and to me, that's like finding your sweet spot. So I thought Bill did an excellent job in finding his sweet spot, because Einstein once said, we can't solve our problems with the same level of thinking that created them, right? So we have to start, we've got to start thinking outside the box.
And that's why we had 2 Dallas residents in a row in our podcast to really get that Texas wisdom included in our mix here. But no, it's a great point. Go where the people are, know what you enjoy, and make sure you're getting out there. It makes perfect sense. And if we have time for one last question, I was wondering if you'd be up for this. If there's one core message you'd like people to take away from your book, and you only had one sentence to communicate it, what would it be?
Well, this is going to be a very long sentence because Texans, we talk very slowly. However, you know, our sentences are very long because this is a very big state. But anyway, the first thing, what I think the core message from my book is to change your mindset from problem solving to possibility thinking, and then find a strategy that helps you evaluate the future risks that you potentially face, which all of this will equip you with knowledge, power, and control.
Well said. Really appreciate it. Carol, thanks for sharing your wisdom with us today. Great conversation, very sage advice, and I know it's going to help a lot of people, so thank you for taking the time to do it.
Great. Well, thank you, Joe. I appreciate it, and thank you, listeners, for listening.
So what did you learn from our conversation with Carol that might be useful for you in your planning, whether you are a sole or ager or not? Here are three that I noted that will show up on my planning and may be useful for yours as well. Number one is picking up where Carol left off, and that's change your mindset from problems to possibilities. I know that's a very truncated version of her sentence, but I think it really hits on a key thing. You can be problem-focused. There are a lot of challenges, a lot of issues to deal with, but balance it by looking at the possibilities. What could be, what choices you have, and what might be possible. Number two, assess your risks. I think her comments about unintended consequences are particularly useful. Look around the corner. When you're thinking about a move or another decision, what are the first and second order consequences that you might not be really thinking about? What are some things that it will affect? Very wise advice. Number three, last but certainly not least, plan for fun. That sounds counterintuitive. How could you plan for something like fun? But actually, it keeps it on the list. It keeps it interesting. It makes sure that you're looking for those places and opportunities that can be fun. And really focus in, as she talked about, on things you enjoy. And the added advice from her, get out of the house. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with a new conversation.
Just one more thing before you take off. Is it time to design your new life after you graduate from the world of full-time work? Go to retirementwisdom.com and schedule a call today with Joe Casey. Working with an experienced coach like Joe can help you explore new possibilities and gain clarity on your future. Thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. See you next week.